Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Susan, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, July 31st, 2024, and we are continuing to read in the Big Book in More About Alcoholism, page 36, the first paragraph, Yet He Got Drunk Again, through to and decided to have another glass of milk. Today's readers are Chanel T, who will read the text, Yvonne A, A Vision for You, and Juanis is our backup. Our newcomer greeter is Carla C, and Jody E will share announcements. The reference numbers for Tuesday, July 30th, 10 a.m. Eastern, is 21,614. And for this morning, Wednesday, July 31st, 7 a.m. Eastern, the reference number is 21,618. 21,618. So you can re-listen. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Good morning, Kathy B. in Oklahoma. Would you please unmute and read the 12 steps of OA for us?
Yes, good morning. My name is Kathy B. I live in Oklahoma, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for allowing me to do service for this month, and I pass.
Thank you, Kathy B. in Oklahoma. Next, we are going to go over to Naples, Florida, and invite Deborah L. T. to unmute and please read the 12 traditions of OA for us. Thank you, Deborah.
Good morning. This is Deborah L.T., a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from beautiful Naples, Florida, and it is a beautiful day. Here are the 12 traditions of OA. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to a compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me serve this July, and thank you to everyone else who has served, and I pass.
Thank you, Deborah. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you please keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the speakers, should be muted. All right, here we go. Today we're going to resume our study of the Big Book, page 36, the first paragraph. Yet he got drunk again, threw to, and decided to have another glass of milk. I will now ask Chanel T. in Washington State to please join us and begin reading. Thank you, Chanel.
Thank you, Susan. Hi, Chanel T. in Washington State, grateful compulsive eater. Yet he got drunk again. We asked him to tell us exactly how it happened. His story. I came to work on Tuesday morning. Remember, I felt irritated that I had to be a salesman for the concern I once owned. I had a few words with the boss. He's serious. Then I decided to drive into the country and see one of my prospects for a car. On the way, I felt hungry, so I stopped at a roadside place, a bar. I had no intention of drinking, just thought I would get a sandwich. I also had the notion that I might find a customer for a car at this place, which was familiar, for I had been going to it for years. I had eaten there many times during the month I was sober. I sat down at a table and ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk. Still, no thought of drinking. I ordered another sandwich, decided to have another glass of milk. Well, that sounds perfectly innocuous, doesn't it? Not for an alcoholic like Jim. Not for a compulsive eater like me. The paragraph, he had made a beginning and things were going really well. He says in this paragraph that he had been sober for months. In the paragraph before, it says all went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. He failed to keep working the program as it's outlined now in this book. I have daily reprieve. I'm not cured. It's a real disease, compulsive eating. It will kill me if I leave it untreated, which includes working this program every day. right? I've got to do that. I've got to be abstinent, but I also have to work this program every day. That's the reality for me. So I can lie to myself and say, because I'm annoyed, but I don't really want to deal with it, that I'll just go take a drive and I'll go, you know, I've been in this bakery so many times. I've been in this bakery so many times and not had anything. That's not true, you guys. I don't hang out in bakeries. But I did. I have neutrality, so I go in and I'm okay. And I go in and I'm okay. What happens? If you go to the barber shop enough times, I'm going to get a haircut. This time, he didn't do a 10th step. He didn't talk to anybody. Notice how many times I, right? I've got to have God with me everywhere I go, my version of God. I've got to have my program with me everywhere I go, or I'm in danger. At this point, he said, still no thought of drinking. But we know that he's going to get drunk again because they just said it at the top of the paragraph. What's my solution? Instead of this insanity, which is what this is, lying to my disease, telling me, well, you need to eat. Eat this bakery. They have soup and salad. Just get soup and salad. Sure, I'll get the soup and salad, but I'm annoyed and I didn't do anything about it that I said, like a 10th step, talking to another fellow or God. And so what happens? I'm setting myself up. I'm setting myself up to have the things in that bakery that are not soup and salad that will trigger my allergy and bring me right back down, face down in the food. And I don't want to go there, guys. I love the freedom of recovery. I'll work. I'll do what I need to do because by grace, I get this freedom every day. If you're new, stick around. Stay with this meeting. Get a sponsor. Work the program. I'm telling you, it's a life changer. It's a lifesaver. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Chanel T. in Washington State. All right. So, although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. If you came in during that share, I want to let you know where we are. We are on page 36 in the chapter More About Alcoholism, that first paragraph, yet he got drunk again, grew to and decided to have another glass of milk. So what I need from all of you lovely people are your first names, your last initial, and the state or country you are calling from. All right, I am ready.
Wendy B.
Ian F.
Wendy B.
Shanna C.
Ian F. Shanna C.
Alicia R., Nevada.
Alicia R., Nevada, okay.
Julianne G., Ohio.
Julianne G., Ohio. Anyone else? All right, we will pause there. So I have Wendy B., Ian F., Shauna C., Alicia R., and Julianne G. And Wendy and Ian will tell you where they are calling from when they share, as will the others. So if everybody other than Wendy B could mute their phones. Thank you, Wendy. Go ahead.
Good morning. This is Wendy B, recovered in Arizona. And, he felt irritation. he was content with his, he was discontent with his circumstances. Instead of, taking his feelings to God and doing a 10 step, he decided to ignore them and drive around, and, he was looking for something outside of himself to make him feel better, and he had a few words with his boss, but he said it was nothing serious. He was out of touch with his feelings, ignoring them. And, he wasn't able to process the hurt and disappointment. He suppressed and minimized his emotions and, he once owned the business, and now he's an employee. And I can relate to thinking something is mine and then it's having it taken away and it's irritating, And by nature, we're selfish and possessive and it feels unfair, And I've learned that the Lord gives and the Lord takes away and it's his prerogative to direct who gets what, what our lot in life is. And I get to learn to be content and accept the hardships as well as the blessings and to learn from them and to grow in character. And you know, and I get to hold my possessions and circumstances with an open hand, you know, continually surrendering them to God. So I don't cling so tightly, you know, to what I think is mine, you know, when in reality, God owns it all and rearranges it all. You know, he arranges all the players and their roles, you know, as he sees fit, you know, for the highest good of everyone concerned. And I get to be in acceptance with that and take my feelings of discontent, you know, to God and let him remove it. And that's all I have. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Wendy B. in Arizona. Next, Ian F. in Indiana. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning. This is Ian F. in Indiana. What always strikes me about this story is that it's not dramatic in the slightest. I always have this image of the relapse, right? This thing that I was so terrified of for so long. And, you know, so obviously it's a healthy fear, but I had this picture in my brain that it was a big dramatic thing, you know, something terrible happens and I scream and I cry and I bury myself in the fridge. That's not what the mental twist looks like. And on the mental twist is the mistaken idea that occurs to us pretty much on a daily basis, all day, of, I got this. You know, like, I don't need help with this. This is fine. I do it. I can do it. I don't have to, you know, worry about all this extra God stuff, you know, whatever. I got this. And even in my experience when I've been in dangerous waters, it's not even that I'm like being flippant about program or being like, man, F program, never that. Literally just, I'll do that later, you know. But the thing is, this is a way of life, you know, and it has to be the way that we live every day. That's what we strive to do. And it's when we decide that we don't need to do that, that we start to slip away. And it's never dramatic. It's just a little voice in my head that says, I got this, and I can't afford that. I just can't. You know, I have to keep living this way. So, love y'all. Look forward to the shares. I'll pass.
Thank you, Ian F. in Indiana. Next, Shana C. in Tennessee. Good morning.
Good morning, Susan. Thanks, everyone who shared. I don't know that I can add a whole lot to what has already been shared. I'm so grateful. Compulsive overeater from Tennessee, through God's grace and mercy. And I'll be quick because of this background noise, I know. So what really struck out to me was the fact that, okay, he's going into this roadside bar. He didn't have cell phones back then. He couldn't make the outreach calls or whatever. But, and I know that in my own circumstances, there have been times where I've tried to reach out to the compulsive overeaters, you know, in times of, okay, because spooky. And unable to get a hold of anybody, but I prayed my ass off, sorry, my butt off, and was like, God, please grant me the willingness and the ability to not pick up that first bite. And whatever that ended up looking like in those moments, you know, God helped me. And what ended up happening was I ended up getting placed in that position of safety and protecting because I could see there is absolutely nothing I can do to stop myself. And what a gift that is. You know, I can look back and see where Jim may have had the opportunity, instead of going into the roadside bar to get a sandwich, maybe if he would have paused and things. And maybe if he had picked up the phone in the bar and called some of his homies back at his home group, I don't know. Maybe. But he didn't have that connection because he failed to fulfill the mind of spirit to work in self-sacrifice for others. It just shows how insidious this thing is, you know, and I identify so much with things being good and peace will not a cloud on the horizon all of a sudden. The idea comes, oh, maybe I can blah, blah, blah. But thank God, the day at a time, I'm given the awareness of, okay, that's a compulsive overeating thought. I can take that to God, and I can turn from that power to carry it out. You know, I'm not cured. And anyway, thank you so much for your service. Thanks for listening. And, have a great day.
Thank you, Shana C. in Tennessee. Next, we are going to go to Nevada. Good morning, Alicia R.
Hi, good morning, Alicia R., compulsive overeater from Nevada. Really grateful to be here this morning. The foolish idea won out. You know, what this makes me think of is you know, as already has been talked about, right, this is the mental twist, and it's so subtle. And even when I, you know, in recovery have had that, those thoughts, they're so, maybe cunning, baffling, powerful is the right term there, right? I don't want to resist them, right? I don't want to do what I know I should do. I don't want to stop what I'm doing, which is nothing but thinking about what I might eat, and go do some writing, or stop what I'm doing and make a phone call, which can be really terrifying for me. I don't want to, right? I like that desire not to do what will absolutely stop that thinking is very powerful at times, right? And I don't even, you know, I can, sometimes I see that and sometimes I don't, right? And it can be so quick, right? And I think, so I guess the point is, that's why from very early on, I was taught to take contrary action, contrary to what, contrary to how I feel, right? Because then it becomes this habit that regardless of how I feel about it, this is what I do. And that is taking, you know, picking up all of the tools, right, until one works and gets me back into solution, back into recovery. And, you know, when I have done those things that I don't want to do in that moment, it has been a profound experience, right? And that is where I've had my spiritual experiences in this program. But it took a lot of not wanting to and not doing it, right, until I got desperate enough and willing to, because I just didn't want to be miserable while in recovery anymore, really, is what it came down to. You know, but I will always wake up with that disease that talks to me, lies to me in my own voice, and tries to get me to go the other way. It doesn't want me to pick up recovery tools, right? It wants me back alone in the dark, picking up the next compulsive bite, slowly killing myself one bite at a time. I love that analogy. That's what my disease wants. And so we'll always find new, cunning, baffling, powerful ways to do that. But sometimes the mental twist is enough, right? And it's familiar. I want to go back to that, right? I heard the other day that the pain of picking up again is less than dealing with the pain of the feelings in the moment, right? That can be my truth too sometimes. But typically in this kind of situation, thank you so much. I'll wrap it up by saying typically in this kind of situation, there's little premeditative thought. It's just kind of, I don't want to. Thanks for letting me share. I'll pass.
Thank you, Alicia R. in Nevada. Next, Julie N. G. in Ohio. Good morning, Julie.
Hi, Julie N. G. From Ohio, compulsive overeater. I know he's an alcoholic and not necessarily a compulsive overeater, but for me, how I can relate to this is being a compulsive overeater. So for him, in the next paragraph, like, that's when his thinking gets foggy and he wants the drink. But for me, in the paragraph we read, like, you know, before program, he's hungry. And so, like, when I was hungry, then I would do impulsive things. And I didn't have any plans. Like, I would, you know, eat a meal, and then I eat another meal, and usually another meal, like servings, multiple servings. I'd go back and forth, and I was impulsive. And sometimes I'd think about, like, how many calories I was eating. Sometimes I wouldn't. Sometimes the shame wouldn't come up until after I was just, you know, sometimes I was eating so fast if I was by myself. And then eventually I got some awareness when I came into OA. And then I realized, like, how... you know, I was able to start thinking about what I was doing. And today, you know, I'm not impulsive like this. When I feel hunger, you know, I know when it's meal time. And I have, you know, so many hours in between meals, and I know what my binge foods are and what my abstinent foods are. And like I said, I have meal times. So like, even if I'm eating abstinent food and it's healthy, I know not to go back for more. You know, I for my abstinence, I don't believe in going back and forth. I believe you, like I plan something out and I eat it in at one sitting. So things are a lot simpler today. And I was able to go on vacation early on in my abstinence. And I told my sponsor some of the things I was doing, like, I told her the things I was doing when I go to restaurants. Like, we have texting now. And because I didn't trust myself with making decisions, and sometimes I still get some opinions on my decisions. Or if she's not available, I just express them in text. And what I say out loud is, you know, helps me to make honest decisions. And it's gotten a lot easier over the years for the most part.
That's time, Julie.
Thank you. I'm just glad for abstinence today, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Julie NG in Ohio. And before I take the next roundup of names, a reminder where we are in case you joined us late. We are on page 36, continuing on in more about alcoholism, the first paragraph, yet he got drunk again, through to and decided to have another glass of milk. So if this is your third day, would love to hear from you, your experience with this paragraph. Please unmute and give me your first name, last initial, and the state or country you are calling from this morning.
Wendy.
Okay, everybody Deborah LT, and I heard a Sherry.
Wendy M.
Okay, Wendy M, but I still heard a Sherry. I need to know which Sherry.
Sherry HM.
Thank you, Sherry HM. Okay, so far I've heard Sherry HM, Deborah LT, Wendy M. Was there a gentleman's voice?
Sandra
as well?
Maria. Sandra Maria.
Sandra Maria. Yes, got you.
Thank you. Sandy K. Kathy F.
Sandy K. Kathy F. Okay, let's pause there. So you'll all have to tell us where you are calling from. Some of you, I know where you're calling from. I've got Sherry HM, Deborah LT, Sandra Maria, Sandy K, and Kathy S. So if everybody other than Sherry HM could mute their lines. Sherry, go ahead, share with us, and let us know where you're calling from this morning. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. This is Sherry H.M., Sherry with a C, from Washington State. And it's just really interesting to read this. I mean, I've read it many, many times before, but he has a gigantic resentment because now he's working for the business that he used to own. So he has that gigantic resentment, and our book says that resentment is the number one offender. It kills more alcoholics than anything else. And, I mean, we can't afford, or I can't afford, the luxury of a resentment. It leads to suicide by fork. So that just really, for me, I have to take care of that emotional buildup. Resentment is like taking poison and expecting the other person to die. So I have to watch out for myself. If I even have like a little seed of a resentment, of fear, this stuff, all those emotional buildup, shame, whatever it is, any kind of thing, then, you know, it's going to lead me into the arms of my refrigerator unless I will be willing to do the work, be willing to say the prayer and, of course, talk to another fellow and, you know, and serve. And I know it's about, you know, trusting God and then turning it over and working through these things because that is what's feeding all the addiction. So thank you so much, and I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry H.M., Sherry with a C in Washington State. Next, good morning to Deborah L.T. in Naples, Florida. Please star one and unmute.
Good morning. This is Deborah L.T. in Naples, Florida. Still looking out a beautiful window and very grateful to be here today. What I loved about this innocuous paragraph was how Jim was sleepwalking through his life. He was having all of these bumps and bruises to his ego and to his income and to everything, and he didn't think anything about it. All he thought was, I think I'll like to stop and get a sandwich. And I am really familiar with that dynamic because I was a compulsive overeater from a very young age. And when I compulsively ate, I zoned out. I was in a state of numb. I didn't think anything. I didn't have any feelings. Certainly didn't have the kind of overwhelming anxiety and fear that I might have experienced in my home of origin. But I did feel hungry. So this repetitive experience of not feeling the anxiety, but rather feeling hungry, made it impossible for me to get to those deeper feelings. I only experienced hunger. So now, if I go through the day and I get hungry, I realize probably not hunger, probably just something going on, and I stop. Before, I would just say, oh, I'm hungry. Let's go get whatever I sounds tasty to fulfill myself. And I was just driven over and over again because of all the feelings that one gets throughout the day to just eat and eat and eat. But I never experienced those feelings at all. It's not like I thought, oh, I'm a nervous. When I get nervous, I eat. Or when I get this, I eat. I just ate. I didn't feel anything. I was completely numb, and I wanted to be numb. So coming to the program, I had to become conscious. Just like Jim was unconscious, I feel like I had to become conscious and not oblivious as I go through the day. So I'm watchful all day long. And how do I stay that way? I maintain my contact with God all throughout the day. I don't force him into a corner where I just say morning and evening prayers or an evening review, but I actually turn to him all day long. And to me, that's what is meant by turning myself over to God. You know, my sponsee asked me the other day, what does it mean to turn it over to God? I said, it means you stop and you make contact with God. It doesn't have to be an elaborate prayer. It could be a very simple prayer, but you ask for help or an intuition or a lifting of whatever you're going through. Or even in my case, tell me what I'm going through. All I feel is hungry. And so I ask for him to rule and to run and to take my life and to make of it what he will. And that has been an incredibly powerful antidote to the ways in which I used to kid myself about what I was doing and how much I was
That's
eating
time, Deborah.
And what the consequences were. Thank you very much. I'll pass.
Thank you, Deborah L.T. in Naples, Florida. Next up, we have Wendy M. in Boulder, Colorado. Thank you, Wendy.
Was it Santa Maria or Sandy? You
no,
yes,
Wendy
good morning.
Go ahead.
Hi, Wendy. Yeah, Wendy M., Boulder, Colorado, recovered. Grateful to be here. Thank you, Susan, so much. I think this is my favorite moment in the entire book because I identify with it. And the way it's the way it describes lying is so beautiful. You know, as many people have already said, it's not an out-and-out lie, right? It is a lie, but it's subtle, like nothing serious. You know, I love that. And I also loved what I heard just now, which is so much of my disease is I don't even know what I'm feeling aside from hunger or jealousy or blame. But I don't even know I'm having a feeling, right? Okay, so what gets us to where we know we're having a feeling? Doing the steps, doing the program, right? Because, like, if I stop calling people, if I stop going to meetings, I get jittery. I get uncomfortable. But here's the deal. When I make one less call that day, next day I'm going to make one less call or maybe two less calls, right? One less meeting, I stop. Okay, so this is where I become Jim. That is why I have to lie to get to my food, right? Jim has to lie, whether he knows it or not, to get to his food, you know? And Anyways, I love the subtlety. But I love the notion that we have to lie, right? Jim has to say, I just thought, that's it. Had no intention. As everybody's saying, you know, Jim didn't keep up his spiritual condition 10, 11, and 12. So if I do less with my spiritual condition, tomorrow I'm going to do even less, right? That's how this works. If I do more, I'm going to do more. And I'm going to do more. I'm going to do more. And I just want to share that, like, my whiskey in the milk is ice cream in the coffee, right? Because once the ice cream's in the coffee, it's no longer ice cream, right? But I have to lie to get there. Or another favorite gym moment in my mind is I'm flying and I'm going to Hawaii, which is 3 hours ahead. So that means I have to have three more meals because I might get hungry, because it's a different time zone. So this is the way in which we get to these lies, right? The answer is just we do the program, right? When I make that call, I get conscious contact with God. When I work with my sponsees today, I get conscious contact with God. I get to God when I do the work, right? That's how we get to God. I adore Jim, and I love this story, and I am Jim. And the reason I'm not doing what Jim's doing is because I'm working this program like my hair is on fire. And with that, I will pass.
Perfect timing. Thank you, Wendy. Next, we have Sandra Maria in Sweden. Go ahead, Sandra Maria.
Thank you so much. I'm Sandra Maria, calling in from Sweden, and grateful recovering compulsive eater. I'm very, very grateful to be on this meeting and to be abstinent. I'm coming back from a relapse, but I have a little bit more than 1 week under my belt, and I really feel like a shift in the way I take it. And I was just doing some food shopping, and I was remembered. So, like, I was referring to the mental twist when I heard this reading, because in the food store, after having, you know, an amazing time with my family, I felt sorrow. And I was like, I want to comfort myself. And because I didn't want to get in contact with that, I start to think about things that once was comforting me, but really killed me, if I say so, in that food shop. And maybe this time, just a little bit. And like, it's like, I know it's crazy. And then I went into the bathroom, like said, God, help me, help me, help me, help me. You know, you need to comfort me. Just help me. I need to do this food shopping, but I don't want to kill myself with food. And I don't want to have this craving. And anyway, so I went in the food store, and just by pausing, as someone mentioned, like, okay, I feel sorrow, that's what I feel, and I want comfort, okay, God can give me that. And God sent someone in the store, a relative, that took my attention. I was like, thank you, God, praise God. And then that place where those things, where my mind was first, somebody else stood there, so in the way, it was like God just showed up. And just by making that simple prayer and taking that small step of faith and action, even though all of me, like, did not want to do it. And so I feel so humble and so grateful. And I know I will never, you know, these thoughts might come up, but it's my choice to, I can choose to act on them or not. That's the choice I have. And God is stronger than any of these thoughts. And through this program, everything is possible. It might not be convenient, but it's possible. And praise God for the life I have to God today, only through His grace and the program He led me to before I even knew Him. And thank you so much, guys, for being there. I will definitely do many outreach today. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra Maria in Sweden. Next, we have Sandy Kay. And Sandy, if you can tell us where you are calling from this morning. Star one, Sandy, to unmute and join us, please.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is Sandy Kay.
Okay.
I am a compulsive overeater, recovered today. in Florida. I haven't shared on this meeting in a long time, and this meeting, everyone sharing really resonates with me. And I love this paragraph also. For me, it's two things. Number one is what other people talked about, is that he had a resentment. He was irritated, but it was more the problem. I'm sure it was more than irritation that led him to think he could put whiskey in his milk. But also what reminds me of how important it is for me to do an 11th step. I could do a 10th step during the day, but unless something is dramatic, I think I'm fine. But there's something about talking to someone at the end of the day and doing my inventory and listening to them. It really, God to me, God speaks to other people. A lot of times I'm listening to them and it triggers something in me, like, you know, you weren't just being a little, you weren't being selfless, you were being selfish. Or it wasn't a little irritation that you got rid of in 2 minutes. You still feel it. So I've been programmed a long time. I'm a lot better than I am in recognizing how I feel as soon as I feel it. But there are times that I just don't know until I do my 11th step. And when I can't do my 11th step with someone, I get a little anxious. So, yeah. All right. Thank you very much for letting me share. I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Sandy K. in Florida. Next, Kathy S. And Kathy, if you too could tell us where you're calling from this morning. Thank you. Star one to unmute, Kathy.
Hi, I'm Kathy F. Hi, do you hear me?
Yes, I can now. Thank you.
Okay. I'm Kathy F. I'm calling from Germany. Hi. Yes, this paragraph, I like this paragraph. As he describes that he felt irritated, and for me mostly it is that for example, when I'm at work, I'm dealing with the person, or I'm having a conversation, and afterwards I maybe feel a little bit confused, or I don't know. I just feel something is wrong with me, and I often don't know what. I feel confused, and I'm losing somehow sometimes connection with myself. So it is important for me always to, when I feel confused or I don't know what's going on, something is not right in my gut, something is going on, I always turn to God. I have to stop whatever I'm doing and pause for a moment, take a breath and contact God and ask God for guidance or for help or to show me what is going on or whatever. It's not important what I say or what I'm asking. I somehow have to get in touch with God, get contact with him and pray. And it's important for me to find out what is going on with me. And maybe I have to do a 10th step. Maybe I have to talk to somebody, to call someone from program, or maybe just talk with my husband and tell him about what's going on. It's different. Sometimes it's also maybe I'm just a little bit angry and it's okay to just feel it. But it's always, the first step is always to go to God with it. It's the most important thing to find out what is going on with me, because I don't feel myself. I just don't do it. I just don't feel what's going on. And this is what I have to say. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Kathy F. in Germany. Okay, we probably have time for one, maybe two more. So who would like to share, please?
AMM.
Anne M, thank you. Anybody like to join Anne?
Ainsley F.
Ainsley F. Okay. That's probably what we have time for. So Anne M, if you could start us off and let us know where you're calling from. Thank you.
Sure, thanks. I'm glad to be on this morning. Anne M from Washington State. This this wonderful paragraph. The next two pages are just terrific in my mind. I've got so many notes on them. But I'm thinking, I'm aware now that when things can be going fine, as Bill writes here, all of a sudden a little judgmental thought enters. This is for me. Enters my little mind, and I vaguely sense I'm not being too smart, but that it's a subtle thing, and I can so easily slip into my comfortable default, not pleasant, of judging, and then anger, and then resentful about some person, place, thing, or situation not being the way I want. And it's like a grand mix of obsession, wanting to control that person, place, thing, or situation to be the way I want it. It's insanity in need of a spiritual remedy, and I never knew that until working this program, reading this book, and finding the answers right here. So I am not in control of those thoughts. I have to immediately, at this point, I can almost catch it, be aware that I can turn this over in a moment. It's needing to be in a more spiritually fit position. I'm feeling discomfort, and here's a convenient, insane excuse, okay? This might help, and that's so crazy. Thanks. That's it for me, and I so appreciate your work and everyone on this line. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Next, we have Ainsley, who will give us her last initial, which I think is S, and where she's calling from. You're going to have 2 minutes, Ainsley. Please join us.
Sure, no problem. This is Ainsley F. calling from Michigan. I just wanted to mention real quick something that I don't think anybody else had mentioned, but one of the tip-offs to me in this story is that he ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk, and then he ordered another sandwich and a glass of milk. Now, maybe he was a big guy, and for him that was totally normal to order something twice like that, but or maybe he's a compulsive overeater like I am. But it reminded me of how I can be in a restaurant or something, and I might find myself eating a little bit more than I had intended to eat. Like maybe I planned on taking half of the meal home, and instead I ate 3/4 of it or all of it, or I eat some of a yellow light food that probably should be on my red light list or something like that. And that really weakens me for the next choice after that. And if I find myself already rationalizing something like an extra sandwich and an extra glass of milk, then I might be really close to the whiskey. So thanks for letting me share. I'll pass.
Thank you so much. And before we close, a big thank you to our team. For Wednesdays in July, Chanel, Yvonne, Juanice, Kathy, Deborah, Carla, and Jody, thank you all so very much. We will now close the reading with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Yvonne A., will you please unmute and join us and take us out with this vision for you?
Good morning, everyone. This is Yvonne A. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.